wait a little bit longer, see who else is coming.
Morning.
Morning. Song's here.
Song, how are you?
Very good. Michael?
Good. We have a pretty good crowd here. Maybe we'll get started. I'll just mention that a number of us were in Vancouver for the fourth international conference on CFAS. It was a fascinating meeting. I've never been at a meeting like that before, in that there were 1,000 people, all interested in CFAS, most of them Canadian. There was a wide range of professions represented, a lot of social workers, caregivers, biological moms, people from the legal profession, and probably 10% of the people were pediatricians, obstetricians, individuals who actually medically care for the children. I'll speak for myself, it was one of the most interesting meetings I'd been to because it brought a perspective on the disorder that we don't see at our own meetings. I think the other thing that was almost staggering about it is that we had a CFAS symposium presentation, actually a plenary, there were probably 1,000 people listening, and it makes me reflect on our own FAS DG, where we have, I don't know how many, 150 people, something like that, in the room. So it was really almost overwhelming to see the number of people who got together, many of them from Canada, who have an interest in this disorder and who represent so many different different professions and different experiences in the disorder. I just thought it was a great meeting and something completely different. Others can speak. Kathy and Jennifer both gave plenary presentations and were very active participants in the meeting. And I guess NIAAA couldn't be there in droves because foreign country, which is unfortunate. There was a lot to do, and there was widespread, I must say, recognition and appreciation of what NIAAA has done for the field. Ken were there also for some of the time. At RSA, there will be again a CFAS presentation. It's going to be, let me just bring this up, I had it just a moment ago. We have a FACE, fetal alcohol spectrum disorders, what the FACE can tell us over time and over species. Luther Robinson is going to introduce it, and Robert Lipinski from the Bowles Center is going to present on 3D models, face brain correlations in the mouse model. Leah Wetherill is going to talk about prenatal alcohol exposure in sheep and mice and craniofacial measurements and their change with age. Peter Hammond is going to talk about analyzing facial dysmorphism using his wonderful 3D methods. Tatiana Faroud is going to present on longitudinal changes in the face of individuals exposed to alcohol prenatally, and I'm going to be a discussant at the end. There is also going to be an epigenetics one. Dale, maybe you want to say a little bit about that since you've organized it.
Yeah. Both Bill and I teamed up with Ava Rede at Northwestern to organize a symposium that, as Michael said, is focused on epigenetics and FASD. Bill's going to give the intro. We've got a person from outside the alcohol field, Kirsty Agard-Tillery, who's at Baylor College of Medicine, and her studies have focused on a variety of environmental exposures, but I don't think alcohol has crept into her work yet, but smoking in particular and dietary effects. So we thought she would lend a very useful perspective. She's drawn some connections between those environmental factors and specific epigenetic gene modifications. Michelle Ramsey from South Africa, who's contributed some nice papers in recent years in the epigenetic FASD area, is going to be with us. Ava Redier is also going to speak. She's been looking at thyroid hormone metabolism and its role in FASD, and she's made some nice connections to imprinted genes and is relating that to the maternal-paternal inheritance pattern of imprinting in that varies across brain regions. It's a very exciting area, I think. And Fang is going to also be talking about his work, and he's got several nice papers in recent years looking at transcriptional and epigenetic DNA methylation sorts of patterns genome-wide. And then Michael will be the discussant for this symposium. So anyway, we're real excited about it.
Right. It looks like a great symposium, and I think it's great that CFAS is going to be up there in a couple of symposiums, and one of the symposia is really a CFAS-focused symposium. So I think that's great for CFAS. And of course, CFAS members are going to be presenting posters and talks in other venues as well. Jill, did you want to say something about the doodle poll and whether we should be having a CFAS meeting at RSA? I guess we should talk about now.
Right. So there's been some questions about whether or not we're going to be able to meet, and that all just kind of depends on when people have free time and whether or not that's a possibility at RSA. As all of you know, meetings pile up on top of RSA for many other organizations as well. So if everyone can complete the doodle poll and or let me know if you're able to attend RSA this year sometime this week, that would be great, because then when Dr. Riley returns from Russia next week, we can look at everyone's availability and determine whether or not it would be an effective use of CFAS time to get together with the people that are able to meet.
Typically, Wednesday afternoon is less programmed.
Okay.
So, also people don't necessarily stay through to the banquet, which is Wednesday evening.
And right.
I think best to just get the information. It may be when we see when people are available that whether to have a meeting will be decided by whether it's actually feasible.
I'm going to go on the doodle poll today and take away things that no one's available for out of the people that have responded, so it'll be less boxes for you to check. So,
good. Okay. And do you want to also mention project progress reports?
Sure. Just as a reminder to everyone, June 1st is when your NIH, NIAAA, the PHS 2590 progress report format forms are due. And again, send me a copy once you have the completed one. And these are the ones that require the face page, the budget pages, all of the forms that are put together, not the Roman numeral style that we collect at the beginning part of the year. And the only person that isn't due June 1st isn't in this group, so we're okay.
Good. So maybe now we can go around and just do project updates and Kathy, do you want to start?
Okay. I think the most exciting new thing that we're working on is a spinoff of what Elizabeth has been showing us in that from the clinical stuff, and that is that there are changes in cortical thickness, and the cortex may actually be too thick in some places. And so we're now working on looking at cortical thickness measures in our adolescent mice. And that's possible because we've had this really nice collaboration going with Martin Steiner's group, and they have atlas types of things so that it can be done rather efficiently to go through the entire cortex and look for areas that are thicker than others. And so that, I think, I'm excited about it because it shows, in fact, how the clinical and basic science groups are sort of learning from each other. Other than that, we're continuing to do all of the segmenting for all of the chronic exposure work, and that's plugging along. We're hoping to at least be able to start writing that up maybe by this summer. And we just had there were a number of papers that were put together for the Psychology Review article, or a whole journal, I guess, on FAS types of stuff. And so ours just came out.
Wonderful. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You'll be sure to update the website to show the publications.
Okay. Will do.
Kathy, I have a question. This is Dale. Do you think that is the cortical thickness, do you think, is going to be related to, like, the heterotopias or kind of alumnar sort of?
No, I don't think so. I think the heterotopias, those are just such tiny little blips that it's doubtful that they're going to contribute much at all to the cortical thickness things. The kind of cortical thickening that Elizabeth's seeing is increased amounts of gray matter.
Mm-hmm.
It's too thick, like there's too much gray and not enough white. And I'm kind of wondering if the areas where that cortex is too thick is areas where, in fact, maybe there aren't enough fibers extending through the corpus callosum to them, or, you know, that there might be a relationship between the fiber tracts that we can track with DTI and the changes in the cortex. So, you know, anyway, that's what we're looking for.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Do you have any preliminary data?
Nope, no preliminary data, but a number of good adolescent animals that are being looked at as part of the group. We know that the corpus is abnormal in at least two of those animals, and so we can see if there is a correlation between location problems within the corpus and where those fibers project to on the cortex.
A question that has come up with Elizabeth's work is, what are the cellular elements that are responsible for the increase in cortical thickness? And of
right.
course, she can't answer that question, but if you find thickened cortex, you can. At
we
least.
Definitely can. So we can go back and do routine histology or, you know, specific myelin stains or whatever on those same brains where we see the changes in cortical thickness. That's the beauty of the system.
And what's also beautiful is you know where to look.
Yeah.
You don't have to do, you know, horribly detailed histochemistry in the whole cortex. You can go to the places where you know.
Right.
Which is wonderful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Kathy, which alcohol exposure paradigm are you using for that?
So this is the acute day 7 stuff. So we've got a number of adolescent animals that we've done the behavior on, and we've done all the MRI and the DTI, and so we already had the images, but we just needed to analyze them for thickness.
Mm-hmm. So you don't need to acquire new images to do this?
Not for this first little run. I expect in order to publish it, we would need to get bigger numbers, but I think this first run is going to tell us if there's something there or not, because we know we have animals that have abnormalities in them.
Kathy, this is Dan. Are there particular areas within the cortex that you're seeing this frontal versus parietal? Or
We don't have any data yet. We're just starting to analyze it.
Okay.
And Kathy, you had mentioned previously that you were having some equipment problems in acquiring new images. Is that something that's still ongoing?
No, it's not ongoing, but it set us back a good while because we had to, you know, all of our animals were timed to get imaged at a certain point in time, and the contrast agent is only good for a little while once you put them in the fixative, and so it really screwed us up. And so I would say we lost at least 6 months on some of our studies, at least 6 months, because of that. So, and what it's going to end up making us do is for our challenge grant, we're going to try to extend that for an additional year of,
yeah,
as a no-cost extension for the challenge grant. For the consortium grant, we're just trying to fill in and do the best we can.
Good.
Do you have a permanent fix on that?
Permanent fix on the...
Whatever caused the delay. I didn't get...
Well, what caused the delay was that there was the worst thing that could happen to a magnet.
Yeah.
Happened. It melted or something. I don't know. Quenched. There's a word for it.
Quenched.
Yeah, it quenched.
Oh.
And so it took a lot to get it back running again and then get everything recalibrated. And, you know, so we're looking at the same things in the same way as we were looking at them before.
I see. So it's a very unlikely event.
It's an unlikely event. A lot of, you know, the stars were aligned in the wrong way that day.
And I take it that not only you but many other people are queuing up who also lost time so that it won't be straightforward to just start using the magnet again.
Well, it isn't just a matter of, they're really good about giving us as much time as we need. I mean, they really have been amazingly accommodating. But we've had to rebreed animals and, you know, start things over again, and that's the time-consuming thing for us.
Kathy, do we need to breed from our end for those?
We might need a few more to fill in, and actually I need to get Scott to look at all of his numbers of good animals that we've got and see if we might need to get a few more from your end to finish up the chronic stuff. We've talked about that, but it's been so long ago that I've forgotten the details. So I'll ask Scott. I'll talk to Scott about that and ask him to get back with you. He's the one who's coordinating all of that.
All right. That sounds like really good progress and some exciting experiments pending. Tim, maybe you could go next.
Okay. So we're preparing a manuscript from our first study that will include facial measures and all the rest for that study. The second study, we're about to begin the eye blink procedures in a couple of weeks. Charlie Goodlett is going to come and visit with us briefly during the beginning of that. But we're basically on track to finish up with all of the animals by the early fall for the second study. I've obtained some local funds to do some MR studies on these same animals that are being generated for the second CIFES sheep study. And so we'll be studying the animals at 5 months of age. So we'll have looked at the animals prenatally at day 76 gestation ultrasonographically. Then we'll look at them using MR technology at 5 months of age, and then, of course, anatomically. So we hope that this pilot data will lead to a some sort of subsequent project.
Great. Thank you. Any questions for Tim? Feng, maybe you can speak about your work.
Okay. We have pretty much the animal part for the alcohol doses and stage for those animals has been harvested and the for the prenatal ones as well as for the micro CT images. We have all collected all the images and now begin to do the doses as well as stage analysis. And so those are ongoing. Among the higher dose, 4.8%, the ones that we have One, the most consistent from what we have looked at from prenatal, which is embryonic stage, all the way to P7, even to P21, is the one marks that carry all the way through is the circumflexes of the head. And that is from very early stage have seen the differences, and to the P7, P21. So this is a one very consistent marks that take all the way through. So we were wondering whether this development and also constrain the brain size as well. The brain that the confined within the smaller circumflexes of the bone structures. The other things that we have consistency is the using the micro CT of the bone structure over the four large pieces of bone, frontal, parietal, occipital, and the jaw bones. We see that those upper bones, frontal, parietal, and occipital, has been carried through longitudinally from the 7 to 21. And jawbone, actually, probably over the age, not become significant, but significant earlier stage. So there's something about this front structure of the bone versus the skull bone are different. I was trying to pull out the front face, probably for neural crest cells, and the other front skull bone is probably from different origins. So these are interesting differences where we're trying to pull out some of the embryonic analogies to look into the mechanism of the differences. Otherwise, we have match the co-registered micro CT with the MRI, which is getting supporting partially from the radiology department, and we're having some MRI images that with very small number of animals that we wanted to correlate with the micro CT to see the inner correlated structures. So that's where we are at this point. And in addition to that, we're writing two papers.
Fung, could you just review the dosing paradigm that you have in these experiments?
Yes.
Right.
Yes. The dosing is that we have a 4.8 volume percent and versus 3.6. So these are two different doses we think whether the dose has effect on the facial structure and others as the brain as well. And the stage is from 7 to 11 versus 7 to 16. So this is pretty much of the first and second trimester to see whether the structure will be different due to the staging issues. So these are the two paradigms.
Fung, can you remind me the BAC levels you're getting with those two different doses?
The BAC of these two are roughly, I think, somewhere around 100 to 150.
For the lower.
So they're actually the lower is about lower than 100, and the higher is about.
That's milligrams per deciliter.
Milligram per deciliter. So the higher can go up to 150, 180, 200.
Yeah. Great. Jennifer?
Well, it's not much to add. We did get the liver levels of the choline metabolites from Carl's group, but nothing on brain.
Uh-huh.
Did they change between treated and controls?
Although appears to be happening is that the fetal levels are consistent across the two. There were some changes in the maternal levels. So it looks, at least with the prenatal exposure, that the fetus is somewhat protected against that. But there may be some implications in terms of if there are alterations in choline metabolism during the breastfeeding period, there might be some effects of the maternal changes on the newborn, but the fetus at least seems to be protected at the liver level.
Okay.
Good.
We're really curious about what's happening at the brain level.
Is there somebody who came on whom I have not called upon? If so, they're very quiet. I'll just mention that work that was supported by an administrative supplement was published last month in Journal of Biological Chemistry, the work on the extracellular alcohol binding region of L1. And the manuscript that whose introduction was lost with my hard drive, I hope will be submitted in the next few weeks. We're working on that, and we now, as I said, really do have a new introduction, and not as good as the old one, but what we have to deal with. Any comments, either from maybe Dale? Any comments on your part?
None that I haven't already made.
Okay.
Everything sounds great.
And Dan?
Nothing additionally at this point, Michael.
All right. Jill, anything else that you would like to add?
No, I think that covers it. Thank you.
Very good. Well, thank you all for the work that you're doing and for being on the call, and we'll be in touch in another month. And don't forget your doodle polls.
All right.
All right. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.